Welcome to the HDFN edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the HDFN community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. I'm sitting here with Andrea Renzi of Nashua, New Hampshire. Andrea is a patient advocate for people affected by hemolytic disease of the fetus and newborn, or HDFN. Thank you for speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Please tell us your story, why you became involved in this disease, and what's your personal connection to it?
My body created antibodies similar to how it would for a virus or bacteria. However, it was towards my baby's blood type. So for those of you that would be familiar with Rogam, it's similar to that, but there is no shot to prevent my antibodies.
And what happened?
What happens is that your babies become anemic and they're also affected by something called hyperbilirubinemia. That's like when you hear about a baby that has yellow skin and it's jaundice. We always tell parents that it's not dangerous, but at high levels, it's actually very dangerous and it can cause hearing loss. It can cause cerebral palsy. It can cause tooth enamel hypoplasia, which is when your enamel is affected in its development.
Can you put this in context? How did this affect you and your family?
It changed the course of our pregnancies. It meant monitoring twice, sometimes three times a week. It meant early deliveries. It meant monitoring post-birth. Our babies had to have frequent blood draws.
How frequently?
The first few days, it's every 6 to 8 hours, and then after the first few days it goes to daily, and then after a week, as we have to kind of watch how the results, so things will progress. We were able to go 2 days and then 3 days, and then it was weekly for the first 3 months.
So Jacob is 10 and a half today. Okay. And when he was born, you knew nothing about this disease, right?
I didn't.
Okay. So what was the first sign that something was wrong?
I went for my normal 28-week blood work that you have during pregnancy before you do a gestational diabetes test and they do a blood type and screening. And at that time, my normal obstetrician was not in town. She was at a conference, and another covering provider caught my positive antibody screening. And she called me and she said, "You have this. I don't really know what it is, but it looks like we just need to do more blood work." So I went from there and I started to research what it meant and called back and said, "I think I also need a referral to maternal fetal medicine." She put the referral in, and in that time, my antibody levels from that screening and my next round of blood work had gone up, and they continued to go up to a level that's considered critical, which is when we monitor these pregnancies with special ultrasounds to monitor for fetal anemia. So I started traveling for weekly ultrasounds to monitor my baby for fetal anemia.
Where did you travel to?
I traveled to Boston. So he never had fetal anemia. He was born at 37 weeks. He did stop growing at about 32 weeks. So he was born at, he was 5 pounds at birth. So he was,
that's pretty early, right?
It's about 3 weeks early.
Right.
So it was not significantly early, but we were tracking his growth closely. So we know he didn't grow from then. He grew a lot once he was out and quickly. But he was born, they did his blood work when he was born. He had they tested his umbilical cord blood. And he was not anemic, but he did have high bilirubin, which is the jaundice that I talked about. But they did not opt to treat at that time, and I was not aware that they should have treated at that time until later, until I learned more.
Okay, and so what happened to him?
We delivered him locally, and something that happened that I'm still traumatized by is that his normal pediatrician was not on by the time he was delivered, and the on-call pediatrician saw that I had positive blood type and she canceled his lab work. She said, "He doesn't need that. Why are you poking him more? You have positive blood, so there's no problem."
But he didn't.
But he had positive blood, but he didn't. He had big C as well, which is what I have antibodies to.
But at that time, I guess this assistant didn't know that.
He didn't understand.
But you said earlier that later you did find somebody who knew about it.
So I was very fortunate after I sent a message to my maternal fetal medicine doctor, and he sent me back some papers, and I finally got, a new nurse came on. She was fresh out of college, and she remembered that one paragraph in her textbook talking about hemolytic disease in her newborn. And she said, I think you're right. I'm going to call his doctor at home. I'm not supposed to, but I'm going to do this. And I said, okay. And so she did, and they reordered the labs, and they came back that abnormal. So she called down to NICU, and they put in the orders for the rest of the labs. And he stayed just under what they call treatment thresholds while we were in the hospital. Then that's where they would admit to the NICU and start lights and IV fluids. So we got to go home, and then we had follow-up labs set up courtesy of that NICU. We went and got them in the morning, and I hadn't heard anything for a couple hours. So I finally called the on-call doctor, and they called me back and they said, you need to go back to the hospital right now. So we went back, and Jacob had, he only needed phototherapy. It's actually pretty rare for our babies to only need phototherapy when they get to levels as high as Jacob's for jaundice. But
how can you give me an idea how high the level was?
It's been 10 years, but I believe he was about a 16. It may have been a little lower. He was just about 2.5 days old. Our treatment thresholds have changed since 2022. We have updated guidelines now. But at the time, he was at a treatment level. So he went back to the hospital, and then he came home, and he was followed by a pediatric hematology at Boston Children's, and they were phenomenal. His hematologist there was completely on top of things. She co-managed care with his normal pediatrician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They discussed things. We thought, since Jacob didn't need any blood transfusions while I was pregnant, that he would probably clear these antibodies so fast. He didn't. He kept his abnormal bilirubin levels for almost 4 months, and he stayed anemic, but just above those levels for almost 4 months. He ended up at 4 months. We were about to transfuse because he was so tired. And they said, we think he just needs a boost. Let's bring him in tomorrow. And he kind of woke up that day.
So he never got it?
No, we went in the next day, and they tested, and he had gone up significantly in 48 hours.
Really?
So 3 years later, I was pregnant again with Morgan, and I thought, surely things will have changed. Things will be different, right, with Morgan?
Yes.
So Morgan, we delivered in Boston. She, again, was born. She looked well. She was born at 36 weeks because she had some testing that suggested she might not be okay. So when she was born, she looked good. So everybody was excited. Oh, she looks great. I said, I was really nervous to go home. Her bilirubin's going up. She's getting really sleepy. Are you sure we should go home? And the pediatrician said, well, yeah, everything's fine. I don't know why you don't want to go home. And I said, I'm very nervous.
Of course.
We went back. I met the doctor on Saturday morning. We did her labs, and she had gone up significantly, but not quite enough. And she said, I think you're right. I do think that she's getting close. I think she's going to end up needing to be admitted. We went back later that evening, and we did her labs, and she called me very quickly and said, Morgan's bilirubin levels are well above exchange transfusion levels, which is when they would do a blood transfusion that takes out some blood and puts in blood, clear the bilirubin. In the meantime, we drove right back down to Boston. She got on under the lights, and by the time they were ready, she had also dropped very quickly. She also, we were fortunate, responded very well to lights, and so she never had the exchange. They discharged us. They came back the next day, and she said, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry I didn't listen to you." And I said, "I'm sorry too," because I knew that she was following almost to the hour.
But she made it. I mean,
she made it. She's healthy now. Jacob struggles now with some hypotonia and some hypertonia. Some things that he struggled with are his hearing. They both had severe enamel hypoplasia from the bilirubin.
So he has dental issues.
Yes. Jacob now, his baby teeth are pretty much all gone, but Morgan is still, we're still going through it. We knew she had jaundice. I look back at pictures of her, and she was orange. And now I know, wow, I should have pushed harder.
Really?
Yeah.
So talk, if you would, about the work you're doing to advocate for other families that are affected by this very rare disease.
Something that, as I mentioned, is upsetting to me is there's still not a care standard. We know we have treatment. Correct. We have treatment levels for bilirubin. The AAP put out updated guidelines, and American Academy of Pediatrics put up updated guidelines in 2022. I actually was involved in the reviewing of those.
You were involved in the reviewing?
Yeah. They increased the treatment levels. So we don't know how that's going to affect babies with HDFN yet.
I see.
It'll probably be some years before we see if that's okay or not.
Why do you think this disease is not better known?
It's very rare. It's very, very rare. And that's something that we talk to moms about a lot in our support group. When they get very upset, my obstetrician has no idea what this is. That's because it's so rare.
How do these support groups work? Is this online or is it a website or Zoom calls?
The group is 14 years old now. So as soon as Facebook groups became a thing, I have a second one that's for not just people in pregnancy. That's maternal alloimmunization support.
Yeah. And is that also a Facebook group?
It is. We found that that's the best way for communicating able to give real-time support, especially with our families are all around the world. So it helps to be able to have something that's instant.
Any final thoughts on what your organization can help people who may be affected by this disease?
Honestly, our biggest thing is we help our families to advocate for themselves, because without care standards, a lot of times a baby that's born with a normal hemoglobin is going to fall through the cracks. And we have seen babies that die from late onset anemia because of this. And I don't want to see any more families destroyed.
I understand. Okay, well, this is quite a story. I appreciate your time. We've been speaking with Andrea Renzi of Nashua, New Hampshire. Andrea is a patient advocate for people affected by hemolytic disease of the fetus and newborn. Thank you so much.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.